This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
And happy Memorial Weekend to all you friendly folks out there. I can't believe it is the last Sunday in May. Absolutely fantabulous. Except for the 90-plus degrees and hot humidity. Guests today will be chatting about real estate and related topics. It's not just about real estate and how many homes sold last month versus same month last year. I mean, as someone who is not a homeowner, I want to talk a bit about what it's like to get over the fear of buying your home. Here's a phrase that came to me when we were discussing the program: sociological benefits of a recession. And I didn't know that there were any. We'll be talking about that through the hour. You're free to call up with your question or comment on the topics at hand. As we get moving along, our guests today, Matt Hodges. Matt, hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for being here. Matt Hodges from Presidential Mortgage Group in our area. And Jim Duncan. Jim?
Morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. From Nest Realty Group. Gentlemen have been on before. And we'll get them all fired up and excited throughout the hour. Write down the phone number because you're going to want it, 979-0919. That's 979-0919 for the local folks. The toll-free number, 1-877-967-6762 for those who need the toll-free. This is a special shout-out to the folks in Lovingston's 94.7. And let me thank Dixon Disposal for letting us be on the air today. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come. When Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. And you can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. Dial them up, 434-978-2111. Online, it's DixonDisposal.com. All right, let's jump right into the topic at hand. Again, real estate, the real estate market, and a lot of the topics and questions that go along with that. Jim Duncan, Nest Realty Group here, Matt Hodges, Presidential Mortgage Group. So, guys, rent versus owning. I had someone just toss out the comment the other day, how much rent do you pay? Because, you know, if it's too much, you should just buy a house. Well, it sounds so easy when you say it like that. But at what monthly figure do you start consider buying a home? What level of rent transfers over to home ownership?
As I've said many times before, the answer to that is that it depends. It depends on your monthly income.
Do you have a placard that you hold up?
I do.
I hear that all the time.
My clients who read my blog always come in, and when I preface an answer to them, they say it depends, right? And it does, because there's no one answer to that question, to really any question in real estate. I think that it is financial, but it's also whether a person is cut out psychologically and from a preparation standpoint to be a homeowner. Because not everybody is, but I think that if you're looking to buy a home, you should be committed to staying in that home for 5 to 7 years minimum, and be prepared to not have a landlord to fix light bulbs and plumbing leaks and roof holes, etc. So I mean, it's if you're looking to spend $1,000 a month, across the board, inclusive of utilities for rent, you might want to look at, just at least have the conversation of whether you want to consider buying a home. But you're also looking at more expenses, per capita than you are, when you purchase than you do when you rent sometimes. Because you're looking at the principal, interest, taxes, insurance, utilities, and everything that comes along with it. So it really does depend on what those numbers are and how they work out.
Yeah, Jim's absolutely right. Some people just are not cut out right at this moment to be homeowners. But if you look historically, not necessarily in a 5 or 10 year time period, but historically, you build wealth with home ownership. So it's something that if you can manage the finances, you can handle the maintenance issues in the house, you will end up better off over time by owning a home.
But how does someone do the finances for comparison? If you pay, and Jim, you said $1,000. If you pay $1,000 for rent, which includes, I guess, water and electric. I think you said utilities included. So let's say you pay $1,000. How does that transfer to, at what dollar figure are you talking about purchasing a home that includes taxes and
insurance?
Yeah, actually, let me jump in. I did an example for a $200,000 sales price. Okay, that's a fairly common number for a maybe a starter home in our area. And let's figure that person has a 3.5% down payment. That payment's going to be roughly $1,325 on a monthly basis. That's principal and interest, taxes, insurance, and mortgage insurance, because FHA requires that. So that $1,322 number, you're going to compare it against what your rent payment is and your sort of your risk tolerance of knowing what a rent payment is, but knowing that you're not going to build equity over time in that rental property. And then further, you need to think about what the tax deductibility is of that number, because you're going to go from having a standard deduction to an itemized deduction. Now, mind you, I'm not giving you tax advice. I'm not a tax professional. But as I read the IRS guides, as a single person, you get a $5,700 standard deduction. Well, you're going to exceed that significantly by owning this $200,000 house. That $1,325 monthly payment is going to be reduced effectively by about $80, given the tax bracket that somebody's in, because they're going to have that much as a refund back in April, or they could change their deductions at work. There's no real clear calculation that you can make to say, okay, if I'm paying a certain amount of rent, I should be buying instead. It is individual in every instance with a buyer.
And I'll also add that, aside from the financial perspective, it's, you know, if you have kids, you know, how much is the value to you to know that you're going to be in that school district for more than 1 year? You know, if you don't have a 3 to 5 year lease, you know, do you want to know that your kids are going to go to X school for the next three, four, 5 years? How much do you value stability in that market as well? Because some people would like to know where they're going to be, and they want to have that stability for themselves and for their family. So it is, you know, absolutely, you look at that, you know, couple hundred dollars a month for rent versus for buying, but also do you want to know where you're going to be living in 2 years? So I think there's certainly a tremendous intrinsic value there as well that can't be quantified on a broad-based basis. It has to be an individual decision of whether that's what you want.
And I realize that, Jim, you're a realtor, Jim Duncan with Nest Realty Group. By the way, RealCentralVA.com.
Yes, sir.
Jim's blog. Matt Hodges from Presidential Mortgage Group. I assume that you only think of this one direction, the renter becoming a homeowner. I don't know if that's fair to think about that you don't do the math for the other direction. But at what point are your expenses too high, and as a homeowner, you should consider going the other way and becoming someone with a landlord?
Well, I mean, you know, if you look at a house that is on the market, and I ran the numbers a little bit earlier briefly, if you look at a house that's been on the market for, and they're asking $800,000.
That's a lot different from $200,000, no, that Matt just talked about.
But, you know, but if it's a house on the market for $800,000 and the mortgage payment on that would be
$4,150 roughly.
Yeah. And there's one that, in this, I'm thinking about one specific house, and the rent is $3,500. You know, do you want to spend that extra $500 a month or $650 a month to know where you're going to be and have the tax value and all the other benefits of home ownership? Or do you want to say, you know what, I'm only going to be here for 2 years. I know that I want to spend that $3,500 a month, which is inclusive of all my expenses, and be done. I think that there's, the Charlottesville area has always been, at least, always my definition of 25 years, has had some transience to it. So I think that for a lot of people, I do look at this, more than the fact that I get paid only when I represent a buyer or seller.
Well, the transience is a good a point to bring up, because starting maybe 3 years ago and moving back 10 years ago, during that time period, we saw a lot of medical residents and Darden students who were buying houses in the 2 to 3 to 4 year range. Mm-hmm. They were being encouraged in some cases to have home ownership. Now we don't see that, because they realize that renting is a much better value for them for this time period. So they may have come out of home ownership and gone into rental, and that, I think that's entirely appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, I should have kept track of the number of people I've told that they should rent rather than purchase in the last 3 years, because a lot of these people come in and they ask me that question of, I'm going to be here for 3 to 4 years for my residency, should I buy? And the answer really is, it depends. I mean, if you're looking at a non quote unquote discounted home, you might be better off, because my rule of thumb now is going back to the way it used to be. My parents, who are realtors, if you buy and sell in 5 years and don't lose money, you've done very well. So for those people who are looking at a 3 year residency or 4 year residency, most likely it's going to make little sense for them to purchase when they don't know whether they're going to stay here, if they want to keep it as an investment property, et cetera.
11:11 here on the Wake Up Call. Our guest today, Matt Hodges, Jim Duncan, as we talk about real estate, the real estate market, getting off the start by talking about rent versus owning. Dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks, and we can be here because of Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. You're encouraged to be kind, have fun, and do the right thing. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports can be found at Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville, and they have 3 locations in Richmond. For more store information online, it's brms.com. Gentlemen, we're talking about being a new home owner, moving from rent to own. And there's lots of conversation throughout the rest of the hour about people who are already homeowners and have been for a while and maybe have had several homes in their purse or pocketbook for some time. But whether you're buying the first time or the fourth time, what kind of job history does someone need to have? Because certainly that must have become a much greater point of interest, higher on the scale than in the past. Is that true?
To some degree, the work history is important. We want to see both a historical existence of that job history, which is looking back for 2 years, and in the future, we want to see continuance for 3 years into the future. You can't predict that there won't be layoffs, but you can quantify other types of income like alimony, child support, retirement benefits have to continue for 3 years into the future. The only real restriction we see in the lending industry is Virginia Housing Development Authority, which is 100% program. You must have been on your first job for at least a year. You can't be straight out of college. But other than that, college or some other higher education or vocational education and straight into your first job is acceptable for underwriting and being approved for a mortgage.
How does it affect the percentage rate?
Oh, not at all.
And what if you are someone who has a history showing a long period of time with your previous jobs, but have just been laid off, or maybe have just taken a new job? You have 5 years or longer with your previous employers, a history of only 2 or 3 for a significant number of years, but now you're in a time period where you've just taken on a new job.
Sure, and I'm guessing that you're assuming that job has a lower pay scale attached to it.
Well, whether it does or not.
Sure.
But you only have weeks or months of a job history with your new employer.
Yeah, what we look at from an underwriting perspective is continuance within the same line of work. So we're looking for continuity between the two positions. If we don't see that continuity, it needs to make sense that they're going into a higher and better field, perhaps, within the employment. The other thing we do look at, and I had this come up recently with a client, is I think that she had seven different positions in the last 2 years. And the underwriter really wanted to know what's going on here. And we could pretty clearly explain why, within the familial situation, there were multiple jobs and the fact that some of these were part-time. But that is definitely looked at very carefully as multiple jobs in the last 2 years.
All right, dial up with your question or comment, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's 877-WNRN-ROCKS for the toll-free number. We'll talk with Jim and Matt about real estate. Jim, you were you'd given me something, this nice little list of potential topics that had two and three and four word lines about the topic. I love this one about down payments. And you said higher is better, or wouldn't that always be the case? Talk a little bit about down payments and when, if ever, a lower down payment might actually be better, but why higher down payments is almost always the best.
That's such a huge topic. And it, let me take the moment to say that everything we're going to that we do talk about, one, is going to be posted on the podcast later, and also I'm going to post show notes that reference the topics we discuss on my blog as well. Because what we're talking about today is just it's very, very broad, and I want people to take the time to educate themselves in detail. That being said, there are some movements afoot now that are going to or may. Change the minimum down payments from where they've been for 3.5% for FHA. FHA may be increasing as well to, I think, 5%.
Right, 5%.
And there's also the QRM, which is Qualified Residential Mortgage, meaning that if somebody were to put down, it's going to make people who are going to have to make sure they have put down at least 20% down payment. And if they don't put down 20% down payment, my understanding is that the lender is going to have to hold on to 5%.
Yeah, 5% of the pool of those loans that do not have a 20% down payment or will have to be held. And just for the uninitiated, when a lender is making a loan, they're using their money very short term. Within 30, 60 days, they're selling it to an investor, into Wall Street, a Norwegian fishing village, AIG. It could be anyone that is purchasing these pools of loans. Now the government is saying through the Dodd-Frank bill, you must hold on to 5%. And lenders don't typically hold on or have a lot of cash to work with. A greater fear that I have is it's going to push out a lot of the smaller lenders, and there'll be less competition. Less competition generally means higher prices.
And I think Matt and I differ a little bit on this. I think there's a lot of value in having those who are making the loans to have some skin in the game, whereby one of the reasons that we got to where we are today is the loans that were made sold at closing sometimes, and the lender making that loan had no look back of risk whatsoever. So they would make a loan for $500,000 to somebody who had been employed for 3.5 months right out of college, and they were done. They got paid. And so then that loan was sold and resold and resold on all these various markets. And then as things are weeding themselves out, people are saying, well, gosh, we probably shouldn't have done that. And so I think that if that lender has to hold on to, a small percentage of that loan in their own sort of bankroll, if you will, I think that there's a lot of value to be had there. So I think that, buyers are going to have to be looking to put down more, which makes a lot of sense in most situations, I think. But again, it does depend on each situation. And I think that we're looking at what could be a vastly new market looking forward the next 2 to 5 years.
Additional issue with that, and Jim and I can agree to disagree on this. In 2010, 75% of the buyers would not have qualified for this type of mortgage. Many of those were first-time home buyers, but many were also repeat. So it does have a real effect on the eligible buyers because of the eligible lenders that might exist at that time.
I mean, and again, from my point of view, I think that for most situations, 20% would be, requiring that as a bare minimum would be a bit extreme. My point of view is that, 10% wouldn't be a bad number to reach. I know years and years ago when my parents were, years ago, they would say that, it was simple. You save 20%. Then got your 30-year fixed-rate mortgage and moved on, whereas now we're in such a vastly different market. A lot of times I don't even answer people's questions about the market, the mortgage market. I just send them to the professionals who know what they're doing, because it changes, a bajillion times a day.
Daily, yeah.
So it's – but I think that also one thing that I'll post when I do the show notes is showing the percentages of delinquencies by loan type. I have a graph here from Calculated Risk that shows what percentage of loans and the change of loans from prime, subprime, FHA, and VA. And FHA, actually, from quarter two 2007, there were about 3 million loans that were delinquent.
And I don't even know what all that means.
Okay.
So let's take our first break. When we come back, you talk about all the different types of loans there. For some people, I'm sure that just flew right by their ears. And I want them to come back and make sure that they understand what all that conversation is about. So we'll be right back with our guests, Jim Duncan and Matt Hodges, as we continue to talk about the real estate market. But whether you're home shopping today or tomorrow, or just thinking about home shopping, you want to know the weather, markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. It's mostly sunny today, highs in the upper 70s, and then mostly clear tonight with lows in the upper 60s. And then tomorrow, Memorial Day, sunny and hot. With a high of 95. Right now, it's a nice and sunny day, a little muggy out there, 79 in the valley, 79 in Lynchburg, 77 in Richmond, few clouds, and 79 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank The Backyard, the UVA Corner's culinary secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. The Backyard has a spring menu, daily specials, and an ever-changing list of beers on tap. For more info, dial them 202-8215, thebackyarduva.com, and you can find them on Facebook. All right, guys, we were talking about the various types of loans, and I don't need, Loan 101 to a grand extreme, but I do want to know a touch when you talk about the different types there. Why do we need so many types? What does each type cover?
Yeah, perhaps we don't need so many types, but in general, conventional loans is what the vast majority of people historically have done. That percentage is dropping at this point to be more of an FHA option. So conventional is Fannie and Freddie. All right, that's where you put down somewhere between 5 and 20% typically. You might have private mortgage insurance, you might not. All right, that has an implicit guarantee by the government, not explicit. It won't mean that the investor is protected. But, when they came to rescue everybody, there was that real guarantee that came through. FHA is for really lower down payments and sometimes credit challenged borrowers. You can have a lower credit score and not get hit with a higher interest rate like you would with conventional. So there we're talking about 3.5% down payment. That is typically, historically, has been looked at the first time home buyer program. Veterans Administration, VA loans, are for those who have served our country honorably in the armed forces. And by the way, this is Memorial Day weekend. I want to thank the service members, both living and who have passed, because this is what the weekend is all about.
Thank you.
And then subprime is that other sort of category that nobody's doing any longer. Subprime, there are still loans out there, but they're either performing or they're not performing. And the non-performing subprimes have been dropped significantly because we've gone through a lot of foreclosures on those already.
What I tell my buyer clients when we have this conversation about the various loans that are out there is really, before they educate themselves on that perspective, I want them to know really what their budget is that they want to stick to. And that's why I ask them, what is your comfortable price point? Because the loan down payment can vary by each program. So if they know they want to spend $2,500 a month or whatever that number is, then they go to a lender to ascertain which programs they're going to fit into, because there is no one size fits all whatsoever. So it really does depend on what their situation dictates. And also, when you're looking at the online calculators that most of my clients, and I think probably most people out there, do, those interest rates that they get, quote-unquote quoted, probably aren't going to be accurate for their situation. They're looking at the person who has the 1,050 credit score and no debt-to-income ratio whatsoever, et cetera, et cetera. So it's why you need to actually have somebody you trust to ask those questions of, because, it might make sense for them to do 3.5% down, because interest rates are ridiculously low right now, and why not use somebody else's money to finance your loan? Or it might make sense for 10% down and to use somebody else's money for that extra 90%. So really, each situation does depend. But looking back, at the subprime, prime, and FHA and VA, it really does depend on what that program is they're going to fit into. Now, I've had clients who have chosen to do VA, not because they couldn't qualify for conventional, but because why not? They've served honorably in our military. They had this benefit of 100% loan. Why not take it? So it really is a situationally dependent conversation.
You can dial us up 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks. Also, instant message through the AOL system, WNRN Studio. I've been getting a lot of questions that way in the last few weeks. Buying a foreclosed home, we were talking about that FHA and the Matt, you talked about one of the styles of lending that has had such an increase in the number of homes being foreclosed upon. Depending on where you go, I mean, you sign online and you get one of those cheesy ads that pops up and says, click on here to make so much money by buying a home that's been foreclosed upon. What are the pros and cons of buying foreclosure?
Wow, that's a loaded question. And let's separate the two, because foreclosures are those sales at the courthouse steps. Literally, the person is being foreclosed upon, the highest bidder. Exactly. But that's not typically what people do. I would say 9 out of 10, or maybe greater than that, are bought back by the bank because they have an unrealistic idea of what the sales price should be. So it goes back into the MLS, and it's listed as an REO, real estate owned. So when people talk foreclosures, really we're talking about REOs. What you're buying with that is, who knows? The property's empty. They may not have power on. You may not have a working HVAC system. A lot can be unknown about those REO properties.
Do you get to go check them out?
Once it's listed in the MLS, absolutely. I mean, they have it's a different sort of system in a lot of ways. And again, the power is a great point. It's the reason I carry three flashlights with me in my car. Is foreclosed properties, you never know what you're going to get.
How many of those are you showing these days? I mean, does our area? I think many people, because the Charlottesville-Albemarle and expanded area, we don't have that problem to a great extreme. I think that's the belief.
That's true from a percentage point and from a volume point, but it is a problem here locally. I hadn't done a foreclosure, I think, in probably 9 years. Last year, I closed on three Fannie Mae HomePath properties. Now, HomePath is a specific program. Fannie is unloading properties. They want to sell them quickly. They sell them relatively cheap with no mortgage insurance, a 3% down payment. I did three of those last year. I did, and I have another one who just ratified yesterday. So they're becoming a bigger issue here locally. And maybe the bigger number, and Jim probably again, is what is the shadow inventory? Mm-hmm. Those are the properties that haven't even hit the MLS yet.
Yeah, I mean, looking at Realty Track, which is, again, preface this with there's no good data for our local market as far as foreclosures. That being said, they are the best that we have, realistically. Nationally, using this one chart that I'll post later, nationally about 17% of the inventory is foreclosures. And the 2291. 17.
And that seems really, granted everything that we've been through in the real estate market and the economy over the last, what is it now? 3 years? 4 years, I guess.
Five, six.
That seems huge.
It It does, but
17 out of every 100 homes?
Yeah. But that's nationally. Locally, they're saying that by their numbers, it's 0.05. You know, so it's not they are a factor here. They're a tremendous factor depending on your price point and your segment. But it's, you know, realistically, you know, from my gut intuition from showing property almost every day, I would say probably 7 to 12, 13% of the inventory out there is foreclosure. But what we don't know is how many are out there yet to come on. And, you know, looking at some data, it says that delinquent mortgages are down percentage-wise year over year. So hopefully that means that we're weeding them out. But then you also read stories like in the New York Times last week that said that the banks own 872,000 homes nationwide. You know, but also we don't know what percentage of those are in the Charlottesville Albemarle MSA. So it really does it's so very difficult to really understand what your market is, and your market is different for every single buyer. You know, you don't know what you're going to get until you start looking at the numbers on a day-to-day basis. And that's why, again, from a buyer standpoint, it's incumbent upon the buyer to educate themselves as much as possible and to read as much as they can. But looking at the numbers of short sales in the market and the numbers of foreclosures, I would say that they're, you know, I'd like to think that we're starting to see them decline, but realistically, I think we probably have, and you know, predictions are only as good as, you know, hindsight, but I would say we probably have another 9 to 18 months of dealing with this sort of issue based on what, you know, I and a lot of productive agents are seeing in the market.
Here's an online question. What is notice of default? The way I'm reading that is what is different from REO versus notice of default?
Well, the online questioner is asking the process of going through a foreclosure and what the proper legal steps are for going into default 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and in the state of Virginia, what is the burden that the lender has before they can go to a foreclosure proceeding. And typically it's after 60 days, but I'm not a foreclosure expert, so I don't want to give specific numbers. But probably the issue that they're asking about is, you know, what happens at this point.
And also, I think it's also that question makes me think that they want to know, how do you find out about foreclosures that are upcoming? Notice of defaults get publicized in various channels, and they just want to know, you know, how do you find out a foreclosure that's coming on the market down the street or their neighbor or what have you? Because again, it's almost impossible to know what's happening until you're able to look at it after the fact. But people, myself included, want to know, you know, what's happening on, you know, 1, 2, 3, you know, on Main Street, so you can really figure out what's happening in that segment of the market.
Yeah, and lenders are required to advertise in print publications for something like 2 or 3 minimum numbers, and that has to be some sort of general interest publication. So typically it is the local newspaper, the Daily Progress, plus 1 or 2 of the weeklies.
And so, I mean, yeah, for me, I have a feed set up where I get emails on a daily basis showing the notices of trustee sales that are coming up as well. So I can see which properties are likely to be coming on the market as an REO in the next, you know, undetermined amount of time that takes a lender to actually process that foreclosure. And again, I mean, that's, you know, a whole other question is, you know, how long does it take a lender to process a foreclosure, and how long does it take for a person to stop paying their mortgage before they're actually foreclosed on? You know, some people have seen 3 months and some have seen, you know, 30 months. So that's another reason why there's so much uncertainty in the market as to, you know, what the REO inventory really and truly is.
11:33 on the Wake Up Call. We're talking about the real estate market, both some local issues and then some more national issues and questions that affect everyone. Our guest today, Matt Hodges from Presidential Mortgage Group, Jim Duncan from Nest Realty Group, and RealCentralVA.com with his blog. Call us up. Send me another instant message question if you'd like. That's WNRN Studio at the AOL instant message site. Dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. We were talking about, Jim, you were talking about being there, showing the homes, having your flashlights, Matt, you had alerted me to a piece that you had done about people not having a realtor to help them. Tell us about the realtor versus the non-realtor representation, the incident that happened, and because there's so many signs out there about home being sold by owner, et cetera.
Yeah. The particular circumstance that my transaction, what it represented was an unrepresented buyer versus an unrepresented seller. So in this instance, there was a listing agent and a seller. My buyer came to the closing table without representation, and there was a problem. The seller was not willing to close. My buyer had movers coming. He had numerous expenses that were occurring. He was finishing up a lease. And the seller came back and said, look, this is on or about close date, not a time is of the essence, which means that it's an undetermined close date. Yes, there is a date in the contract, but we don't really have to perform until some random date in the future. And while the listing agent was very helpful in trying to move it forward, he wouldn't get paid until the transaction occurred, he was still looking after his seller's best interest. He did a professional and a ethical job with his seller. But the problem was that my buyer had no representation. He had to then hire a real estate attorney because he did not have a realtor, and it ended up costing him a good bit of money in extending his rent, stopping the movers and getting them restarted, paying for the legal bills. So there was an issue here that the realtor or the real estate profession is a profession. There are realtors out there that do an excellent job. There are some that don't do a very good job at all. But in general, it is a profession. And yes, you do pay for that, but you also reap the benefit of having a realtor involved in the circumstance.
I mean, and selfishly, I'll highlight that. I think, you know, I see oftentimes where, particularly from a buyer's perspective, because this is what we're talking about, where if you don't have a guide through the market and the transaction, it can become very jumbled and much more emotional than it needs to be. If you don't have a buffer between the two, or four parties in this case, it can get much more complicated, convoluted, and you know, vitriolic in a lot of cases, because emotions are very powerful things. You know, I bought a house 2 houses ago where I went to the unrepresented seller, and you know, I was a professional and I tried to handle it that way, but our emotions did cloud the conversations and the negotiations greatly. But I think that there are, you know, so many potential pitfalls that good realtors are aware of and can foresee and head off that you just can't find through Google or Bing. That, you know, I think it pays to have a professional representing you. You know, I could figure out how to, you know, fix my car or, you know, do my plumbing or, you know something, any other task, but I choose not to also. I mean, my time is valuable and I choose to use it efficiently as I can. But I think that having somebody to answer your questions, as I tell my clients, you know, ask me, I want to be your resource for your stupid questions. The ones that you can't answer online, the ones that you think you probably shouldn't ask because it's a dumb question, but it's something that gets asked of me by every single one of my clients because it's not out there online. So I think that having somebody to answer your questions and to guide you through the process and to help you manage the transaction, which can be very simple and also can be extremely complex, it really pays. In one example, as I had a listing a couple years ago, where there were some issues that came up that my seller did not need to know about because I handled them, and we got to the closing table and I said, well, you know, just one simple question: was it worth it? And he said, I don't know. You sold my house for full price in under a week, and I didn't know of any problems that came up, so I can't really tell you whether it was worth it or not.
Right. It seems like it was so simple that I could have done that.
Yeah, exactly.
Put the sign out front and, you know, somebody walks up and writes me a check.
Exactly. He said he didn't have a chance to really ascertain whether my skills and services were valuable. And I take that as a huge compliment, that he didn't need to know. He paid me for my services, I performed them, and he closed successfully. So that's probably the best compliment I've ever had, is I don't know how valuable you were.
All right, 11:39 here on the Wake Up Call. Jim Duncan, Matt Hodges, as we talk about the real estate market.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
And it's The Hook's annual Summer Guide. From go-karting to cherry picking and some hidden gems you might never think of, these ideas show there's no excuse for summer boarding. Would you cancel a road trip because gas prices are too high? You could be robbing yourself and your family of fun for no good reason. And read about the new baked goods with breads here in town. The Hook, two-time winner of the state's journalism top prize. And today's programming on WNRN brought to you by Blue Ridge Graphics. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom t-shirts and sportswear plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. Let me take a moment and let people know about the Nelson County SPCA and the Animal House Ball upcoming. People who listen, I always talk about my dog Lazarus. Lazarus was at the Nelson County SPCA at the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center, and they're going to have their fundraiser, the Animal House Ball, on Saturday, June 18th at Wintergreen's Skyline Pavilion. It's a no-kill facility in Lovingston, the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center, and the Animal House Ball features a silent auction, they have raffles, a buffet dinner, and they'll have some dancing. Call Mountain Area Realty now to reserve your spot. Donate a little money, help the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center so other dogs like Lazarus can hang around and find your house. All right, back to Jim and Matt. We got a question that says, what is the difference between selling a house and selling a house as an estate?
From a marketing perspective, not much, other than you need to know who the parties are involved in the decision making process. Some estates that I've worked with from a transactional point of view have had 6, 7, 8 people that needed to sign off on the decision making process.
Well, what makes it an estate to start off? I mean, to me, a house has a yard, and an estate has two other little out buildings and a hedge and a stone wall for the driveway, et cetera.
A dead person.
Yeah. A dead person's house.
Got it. So the estate is sold after someone passes away and they didn't have a choice to sell it while they were still alive.
Yeah.
The homeowner dies.
And one of the important things from the lender perspective is to make sure that those who have the right to sell this house can contract for it. So we might need to see will, we might need to see other legal documents showing that that person has the legal right to sell the property.
Right. But, I mean, from a seller's point of view, from the listing agent standpoint, I need to know who those people are and who needs to make the decision-making process. And from a buyer's agent point of view, same thing, but that goes into what the offer may be, because if you have one person, it might be a more simple transaction, but if you have 8 people who are going to benefit from the transaction, from the sale, they may each want to get a little bit more, and there may be some discord within the family. So it really does depend on the situation.
Goodness, how do you handle that? I mean, the word professional has been used several times, and so now you're dealing with not one person or a couple, but now you're dealing with siblings or other relationships within a family. To get everyone to come together on one side of the equation.
Well, I mean, I tell a lot of my clients that through our respective relationships that a lot of what I do is not just about real estate. And that's the case. I mean, that situation, you need to be a counselor, you need to be a communication professional, and you need to be unemotional. So, I mean, it's a matter of providing them all with the same data so that none of them feel like they're being one-upped or that some information is being hidden from them, because I've seen that feeling as well, and make sure that they all know that the offer that we get, if I'm advising they should consider taking it, then I need to make sure that they all know what the data is that I'm looking at and what the numbers are and what the broad market is and why I think in my professional capacity they should accept or negotiate this particular offer. Because I've seen some where 3 out of 5 will say, no, the market in San Diego is fantastic. Why in the world do I accept a lower offer in Charlottesville? And that's when I have to really put together, you know, a package of information and say, this is why, and this is why your market is different, this is why ours is what it is, and this is why I'm coming to you with this particular advice. And also,
oftentimes that exists with divorce situations too. Mm-hmm.
In that case, you know, email is great, and the best part about email is the carbon copy, making sure that in this one particular incident, the reply all is a critical piece of information and great tool, because you really want to make sure that they're all on the same page. And so again, it's one of those things where it does depend on what the situation is.
All right. Well, hopefully we answered that question for that listener quite well. If you have a question, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Sean McCord here today. Transferring that caller's question directly in here, I'm sure, just as a carbon copy. Jim, I wanted to get into this, and I saved it till later in the hour. You wrote down for our hour today, sociological benefits of a recession. What in the world is that? What are the benefits? Are there any financial benefits of a recession? Certainly, what are the sociological benefits of a recession?
Here's what I mean by that. I mean, I think that neighborhoods and communities can see strengthening through a recession by virtue of the fact that a lot of people, you know, one, can't sell, so they need to stay. And two, from my experience, a lot of my buyer clients are choosing to buy and stay for years. I mean, they're making a commitment to their house, their neighborhood, and their community to be in one place for 5, 7, 10, 20, 30 years. I mean, one of my clients who's building a home said this is the house that they intend to retire in. These are young guys. I mean, they said they're going to be in that place for 30 years. You know, and they're really great, nice people, so you can have great, nice people living in a neighborhood for a long time. But I think that means that their kids are going to know the other kids in the neighborhood, and they're going to grow up together, and they're going to, you know, live in the same world together. And I think that you're going to have, you know, shared experiences, and people are going to be able to draw on them for years. I mean, the value of having, you know, kids you've grown up with is tremendous. I mean, you know, it's a lot of the military kids that I've worked with, I mean, they move around every year, 2 years, and so they don't get the value of that. But for the people who have had the you know, really the benefit of having friends from the time they were 5 or 6 up to, you know, 30, 35, that's a relationship that they can really build on. But also, I think that there's value in my neighborhood. We've been there for 5 or 6 years. You know, when my kids get out, or my little one especially, when she gets out of the car when we get home, you know, and she runs away, you know, I'm cool with that. You know, I know the neighbors, I know the neighborhood, and I don't have the concerns that a lot of people have about being in a new neighborhood. You know, the first place we lived for 2 years, you know, I knew my neighbors next door by sight, but I didn't really know their names or know who they are. And you know, so now I know all of my neighbors, I know all their names, I know that I'm comfortable in that neighborhood. So I'd like to think that from a sociological standpoint, we're going to have better living environments and less crime and more freedom for these kids and for these parents. So it is a difficult argument to make from some points of view, because there really is a lot of pain and suffering out there. In this recession, and I don't want to minimize that, but for those who are able to make the purchasing and living decision to be in one place for 10 years, I think there's going to be tremendous benefits from that we're going to see for a long period of time.
So, guys, who is buying now? We as the recession, the damage done to the home market. I can still look online in the Charlottesville area and see a vast number of homes that have been on there for months and months and months that have dropped well below their initial asking price. What is going on in our Charlottesville market, and who is participating in it?
I'm seeing, sadly, not just in my clientele, but my peripheral as well. Unfortunately, I'm seeing, you know, a fair number of life situations, I mean, divorces and people passing on, and people wanting to stay, and, you know, older people who are making the decision to be in a place for 5 or 10 years. And I'm also seeing a lot of people who are, you know, gratefully and gladly in a position to trade up, who are making the decision to say, you know what, I've been here for X number of years, I've got a kid, I've got another kid coming, I want to be in this house for 10 to 20 years. And also I'm seeing a lot of people who are downsizing as well, who are able to make that decision. And, you know, a lot of cases it's to take a loss on that big home and move into a, you know, a smarter sized home for their situation, because I've seen a lot of, you know, again, locally and nationally, you're seeing that people have come to terms with the fact that the 4,000, 5,000 square foot home is such a colossal waste of pretty much everything you associate with
it. But they're still being built.
Not the 5,000, 6,000 square foot homes at the same scale that they were, at least not locally. You know, you're seeing, you know, most of the, you know, this is a great, I'll write a story this week about it. You know, I think that the homes that are being built now and the ones that are selling generally are in the you know, it's a very broad thing, but in the smarter square footage segment, you know, 1,500 to 1,800 square feet or so minimum, and then up to 2,500, 3,000 square feet, because people are recognizing that they really need, you know, a kitchen, a living room, bedrooms, and that's pretty much it, an outdoor living space. And beyond that, again, it's very broad, and each one is specific. But, you know, broadly, the market that I'm seeing is that's what people are buying. I'm not sure what Matt's seeing in his clients.
Well, what I'm seeing is people who have a very healthy job security, either their belief or in actuality their job is very secure. So we're seeing a lot that are employed in the defense industry through NGIC, DIA, NGA, and the related subcontractors, SIIC, CACI. We're seeing those jobs that have come here with BRAC as well-paid jobs that are going to be here for a good long time. Charlottesville is very important to our defense of our country. There's some speculation that without our location down here, Osama bin Laden would not have been killed, that a lot of the work was done here. So there's a lot of job security, and we've got a lot of buyers that are coming out of the defense fields. Past that, we have a lot of UVA employees because they're pretty secure, companies like CFA. So I'm seeing not the speculation that existed previously, but those people who are entrenched in their jobs and feel confident about their futures.
11:51 here on the wake-up call with Matt Hodges and Jim Duncan, Jim with Nest Realty Group. Don't forget, you can always go to his blog at realcentralva.com. Matt Hodges from Presidential Mortgage Group. Matt, you have a blog as well, and there's a, I want to jump into the topic. What's your blog?
Well, you can reach me through compasshomeloans.net, where I blog might occasionally be as a guest blogger on Jim's site or on other sites. So I don't physically own my own blog site.
Well, you had an interesting piece talking about backyard gardening, et cetera, and I don't want to jump too far away from what we've been talking about, but people who are comfortable in where they live seem to be, to me, my guess would be that they're more likely to participate in this. People who are there where they plan to stay.
Yeah, Jim brought up a great point of those communities where you really build community with your neighbors. You know who they are. Well, why not participate in the earth with them also? So the community I live in is called Farm Colony. It's just south of Standardsville. We have Black Angus cattle. So we run cattle twice a year, we'll sell them, and several of those we hold back and we split amongst ourselves. We take it to the butcher, and the butcher prepares it, and we come back with steaks and roasts and ground beef. And we know where the cattle's been. We know it hasn't been shipped to Chicago to a feedlot to be pumped full of grain. We know it's natural grass-fed. We've got chickens that produce the most wonderful eggs, high in omega-3s. We've got a garden that is we all participated in yesterday. We came together. We were planting tomatoes and peppers, and it produces the most wonderful fruit, lettuces, chards, potatoes, peppers, broccoli, strawberries. Amazing what you can get out of the earth if you work it, and the community that is developed with all the people coming together. We know our neighbors. We trust each other.
Let me take a moment here and put out that I believe Sean McCord is going to be substituting for me in 2 weeks, and he will be doing a program on a similar topic about a local farm. So for those who are caught up in that topic and want Matt to keep going on it, be here in 2 weeks for Sean to talk about that. Jim, do you have people come to you and that is one of their first requests is, that's the type of period, you know, the setting that I want to be in?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the farm colony is exceptional on a whole lot of levels. Exceptional also in that it's one of the few in the area that have, well, if not the only in the area that has that kind of the backbone with the cattle and the gardens and such. But from a smaller scale, I mean, I do have people who come and they want to know, bedrooms, baths, location, but also they want either a garden spot where they can have their garden or a community garden. And it's something that, and again, a lot of it is self-selection. I mean, I write about it. I ride my bike all the time. I have a garden that I write about once in a while. So a lot of it is self-selection. But I would say, 30, 40% of my clients want to have a backyard garden. They want to have access to growing their own food. They want to have that, again, from a community standpoint, you're making a commitment to your neighborhood and to your home and also to your kids, teaching your kids about, the fact that you don't have to go to the store to get lettuces. You can actually grow it yourself, which is a pretty awesome thing to teach a kid, a life skill they can carry on with them. But I would say that, again, it's something that is highlighted in a lot of the marketing that I see. You see Garden Spot, which in most cases is a true garden spot. It actually has sun, it's level, et cetera. But I also see a lot of people are, when I'm riding my bike around especially, I see the gardens that people have in their front and backyards that, again, anecdotally, I would say it's, greater than I've ever seen it. Is that people are actually making that choice and that commitment to themselves to have gardens.
11:55 here on the Wake Up Call. Our last few minutes with Tim Duncan and Matt Hodges. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. And I need to take a moment and thank L. Oppelman's. They are Central Virginia's complete music headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department is now featuring acoustic guitars, banjos, mandolins, and violins, as well as electric guitar packages from Fender. Also available, it's complete drum sets. L. Oppelman's, 909 Main Street, Lynchburg. Online, it's loppelman.com. All right, guys. I'm sure I haven't gotten into a handful of the things, Jim, that were on your list. Pick one that you think that is very important that we've skipped.
I'm looking at the stories I brought up, and I think that the inconsistency in the market and the confidence in the market is one that I think is crucial. I mean, you read a lot of this stuff about how foreclosures are just a huge aspect. We touched on earlier, 17% of sales are foreclosures, but that's nationwide. I think that it's really important for buyers in our market to understand what is our market and what is their market. Because San Diego, parts of Florida and the foreclosure hotspots within our country are not our market. And I think so these media numbers, I'm not one of those who says that it's the media's fault that we have all these problems, that we have so many issues. But I do think it's the people's fault for not reading beyond the headlines, because you can see that foreclosures are X, but on the three streets that they're considering, foreclosures are Y. It really does matter. So I think that it's really difficult for people to understand, the difference between, as Matt and I were talking before the show, the New York Times has a story that 872,000 homes are owned by the banks, and then you see this other thing saying that mortgage applications are up week over week. I mean, those are two extremely conflicting headlines. But I think that people need to understand that they need to take those two headlines and, frankly, in a lot of cases, ask a professional for interpretation of how it affects them, and also how that affects their confidence or lack thereof when making decisions. Because there is so much information out there, and I could give you 10 stories to say that now is the best time to buy a house, and I could give you 10 other ones to say you shouldn't even live in a house; you should live in a yurt out on the farm. So there's no way to understand what your market is without taking the time to really study it.
It depends, right?
It depends.
I just saw your placard go up. It depends. Matt?
Yeah, just one thought. Part of this qualified residential mortgage reform through Dodd-Frank brought up residual income. Now, in my lending world, only VA loans have residual income calculation. What is that? Okay, that's your gross income less your revolving debt, your credit cards, your installment debt, student loans, car loans. But it's also your child care expenses. It's your utilities. It's your maintenance on the property. It is a net income figure that is a calculation. That's what I'd love to see us come to, is reasonable underwriting standards that make sure that you can actually repay a loan.
Or a reasonable tax code as well, which you know, which would be really cool.
Yeah, I like the concept that I think a politician from years ago said, "What do you make? Pay 13%."
A lot of value in a fair tax.
Yeah, well, thank you, gentlemen, so much for coming in today. Next week's show, we'll be talking with some amputees about what life is like, whether it's through trauma or medical issues, and the medical care that goes into that. Write down June 18th, and go to the Animal House Ball down in Nelson County. Call Mountain Area Realty. And please, Memorial Day, Matt mentioned it earlier, remember what it's about, and think about those folks who have supported us all.
Amen.
Thank you, Rick.
Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.